for me from a young age, just not having a lot of self-belief and self-confidence. I think it just always started from worrying about, you know, my place in the squad as a young athlete, to then, you know, meeting the expectations of, you know, Australia, Diving Australia, all these, you know, people I had to sort of answer to and perform for. I think that just sort of beat me down a bit, and I really felt that mentally. So I think for me, it's been a really long time and a long process of building up that self-esteem.
Hey, this is Jackie Tan, and welcome to the Bodies Built Better podcast. On the show, I chat with experts, athletes, coaches, and ordinary people doing extraordinary things. We explore the body's incredible ability to heal, adapt, and evolve so you can crush limitations, reconnect your body and mind, and discover your extraordinary potential. Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Bodies Built Better podcast. I am so unbelievably excited about this one. I had the absolute honor of chatting with four-time Olympian and Commonwealth Games gold medalist, Melissa Wu. Melissa started diving at the young age of 10 and made her Commonwealth Games debut at 13. She recently won bronze at the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, and we talk about why this one is so special. She's currently managing a back injury and is on the road to recovery with the 2022 Birmingham Commonwealth Games in sight. And on top of all of that, she also runs two businesses, she coaches, and she's currently gracing your TV screens on Channel 7's SAS Australia. She is an absolute powerhouse. We talk about the impacts of diving as a sport, the toll it takes on your body, and the mindset challenges that come with competing at an elite level. She's not only an incredible athlete, but she's a kind and humble person, talking openly and honestly about her challenges. Be inspired by the incredible Melissa Wu. Melissa, thank you so much for chatting with me today. Welcome to the Bodies Built Better podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, and it's such an honor because I, along with the entire country, have followed your career for such a long time now, and you've had such an incredible career. And we're recording now, and we've seen two episodes of SAS Australia, which is also phenomenal. And I have heart palpitations every time I watch that, because the things you guys do are incredibly scary and incredible. So it's so cool to be able to talk to you. And at the moment, you're also making headlines all over the world with your back, the injury. Are you going to get to Commonwealth Games? Firstly, how are you? How are you going?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a challenge the last few months since SAS to try and get my back good again. I actually did a competition in Abu Dhabi at the end of last year, and that was quite tough. I had about sort of 6 weeks to get ready for that, but I hadn't done any training since Olympics, and then coming back, I had a bad back that just hasn't really gotten any better. So that was a bit challenging to prepare for. And then I took a bit of a break over Christmas, and then basically just been trying the whole time get my back right and still doing that. So coming back this year, I think just focusing on how I can manage it the best way possible and how to make sure that I'm still moving forward and not take any steps back. So it's a bit of a fine line with how far I can push myself, and just got to be patient, I guess, and trust the process as well.
Yeah, for sure. How do you feel? Do you feel like you're staying steady with it all?
Yeah, I think I've made some progress, especially in the last couple of weeks. Coming back in January this year, I just did it really slowly, and I'm trying to do it in a way that is, as safe as possible in terms of not doing it, not re-injuring it or making it worse. So I've done that in a really good way. So I'm kind of making steps forward now, which is really exciting for me. Awesome. I feel like I've just plateaued a bit, but yeah, it's good to be able to have a little bit more movement now in my back and be able to start doing some harder dives again.
Brilliant. Well, we wish you all the best for the road to Commonwealth Games.
Thank you.
Melissa, you have won 62 medals in your career. 42 of them have been for synchronized events and 20 of them as an individual. Last year, you won your first medal as an Olympic individual diver at the Tokyo Olympics. Firstly, massive congratulations. That is huge. And secondly, what do you remember of standing on the podium?
Well, thank you. That's it was a pretty amazing experience. And I didn't actually know how many medals I've won, so that was really hearing you say that. But yeah, definitely, I guess you're always looking forward to the next thing, which is why you don't really stop and think about it. For me, you know, despite, you know, trying for years and years to try and get that Olympic medal, you know, it was always just, what can I do better? How can I be better? And it was always a dream of mine to be able to win that medal individually and not only just in synchro. So standing on that podium, I think too, just the back end of my career, having a lot of challenges with injury, personal things that I had to overcome as well, a lot of hard work in self-belief and things like that, and on my mental game. I think that standing on that podium was just that moment where I realized, you know, all the hard work that I'd put in had finally, you know, I finally had something to show for it. And that was a pretty proud moment for me. And I think just knowing that I'd done my coach proud, my family proud, and all the people that helped me get there as well, that was such an amazing feeling.
Absolutely. Was there almost a sense of relief?
Yeah, definitely. I think that when you go into comp, you're always so focused on performance and you kind of block everything else out, and everything, you put everything into that moment and you put so much on the line that when things do go well and they do go to plan, yeah, you're happy, yes, but I think you're almost like mostly relieved. And for me, that was definitely the case.
Do you remember your thought process going into that last dive?
Actually, my thought process was really similar to the other rounds of dives. I deliberately try not to put too much pressure on myself. I deliberately do all the same routine type things and keep every round the same. I try and bring my emotions like right down so they're in my control, and I don't change anything, because the minute you sort of change something in your routine and you think, oh, you know, now a medal's on the line, that's when things can unravel pretty quickly. And from my past experience with myself, that is always the case. So I just did everything I could. I knew that I was sort of up there, but I just really tried to keep everything normal. Just imagine it's another day at training doing that dive that I've done over and over and over again. And I just tried to put everything all the work I'd put in, just, you know, put that in at the right time. And yeah, that worked out really well for me.
When did you realize you came third?
I think basically like from after I finished the last dive, then I was just, you know, on pool deck watching the scoreboard the whole time and seeing the divers after me, where they were placing. And I think then it like wasn't long after that I found out that I'd, you know, won a bronze. Definitely the Chinese, I knew they were going to come first and second because they were unbelievable. But knowing that I'd won that bronze medal was a pretty amazing feeling, and just celebrating with my coach on pool deck was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And when did you get to speak to your family?
Well, basically like that's like as soon as I left the pool, but there's a lot of stuff that goes on before leaving the pool. You know, you've got to do the medal ceremony and a bunch of other stuff, the drug testing and all that, some media and all that kind of thing. So it was a little bit later when I spoke to them, but I knew that they were watching back home, and I knew that they were supporting me. And I was kind of excited then to just have that moment where I did get to talk to them, and it wasn't going to be like a rush thing. It was just, you know, my undivided attention and just being able to share that moment with them was pretty special.
Did you get to your phone and there were just stacks of calls and messages?
I can't really remember. I think I'm pretty sure my family and, you know, the people that my family and friends would have all messaged me, but it's usually more on social media that things sort of blow up anyway. So you get pretty used to it. I think that's one of the hardest things in comp too, is that you get notifications and you've got to kind of, you know, like ignore them. If you're on your phone listening to music and that kind of thing, you don't want to see anything that comes up on the screen. So I think I just get used to sort of blocking all that out, and I was like, I'll just deal with it later. And even afterwards, I just kind of enjoyed that moment to celebrate and thought I'll get to all the messages and everything later.
Brilliant. How does this compare to other wins? Because you've won gold, and the last gold you won was at the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games 2018. How is this different?
I think that this one is actually pretty similar for me. That gold at the 2018 Com Games was also really special to me. Again, I think just at the older I got and the longer I've been in the sport, I've had to overcome more, and it is more challenging when you're older as well. And I think that one to me meant a lot just because of the journey to get there, and diving in that pool at the Gold Coast was quite scary. I've had a lot of sort of not great experiences there, not very good performances in the lead up. So that one was really special. And I think that was a really good stepping stone for my confidence to then go into Tokyo and to be able to get that individual bronze. And for me, Olympics is the pinnacle. That's, you know, the ultimate thing. And so for me, definitely the Olympic medal is the most special. But for me personally, it's on par with the Commonwealth Games gold as well. Very special to me. And I think just at this point in my career, really appreciating what they mean to me.
Yeah, beautiful. You are one of the most successful divers in Australian history, becoming one of three divers to qualify for four Olympics, which is such a huge achievement. Knowing this, how do you feel when you hear about that? I mean, just a second ago, you're like, 62 medals. I didn't even know that. So there's so much incredible things that you've achieved. How does that make you feel?
I think for me, I don't really focus on the achievements so much. They mean a lot to me. It's not that they don't mean a lot, but I think for me, the achievements are more a reflection of the work that I put in and the person I became in order to achieve them. So when I think about the achievements, I don't think of it in terms of the accolades or the physical medals and things like that. I think of it as, wow, that was a massive step for me to be able to achieve that because I had to do this and that. And so I think then whenever I think about it, it is cool to reflect on it, but think about, wow, I'm such a different person. The person that was able to go and win those medals was a very different person to the person who choked, you know, at the Olympics before that and the Olympics before that. And for me, that's where I feel the most proud and happy when I look back, is knowing how far I've come.
Oh, good on you, Melissa. Let's start at the beginning, which is now a long time for you because you've been in the sport a long time, 10 years old when you got into it. How does a 10-year-old decide they want to start diving?
Yeah, it's not a very common sport in Australia. My family was always quite sporty when I was younger. And my sister was a really good swimmer. So we spent a lot of time around pools and I did swimming, but I really hated it, like hated it a lot, as you've probably seen from SAS, how bad I am at it. But then basically watching her race at Sydney Olympic Park was where I first saw diving. And I used to always wander down to the other end of the pool and, hope that they'd be there and then I'd get to see them train. And I just fell in love with it from the moment that I saw it. I used to love flipping around the house and I did a little bit of gymnastics when I was younger. So I was always more drawn to those acrobatic type sports. And as soon as I saw diving, I just wanted to try it. And I just knew I would love it.
Yeah. So do you remember jumping off the 10 meter?
Yeah, it took me a while. I was not very brave when I was younger, so it took me a little while to jump off. But I think then once I got better at diving and I got a bit more skilled, then I loved it. I loved doing platform and I learned my 10-meter dive list at a pretty young age and got to compete at a young age, and that was pretty amazing.
You did compete at such a young age. How does someone so young deal with that kind of pressure? Did you realize you had that pressure on yourself? Kind of oblivious to it? I know you did.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, the pressure came not even just from being at those competitions, but just there was always a certain standard that you had to meet. So when I was about, I think it must have been 11 or 12, I got into like an Australian Institute of Sport junior squad. And that was a big opportunity for me because they only took about three of us and they wanted to start getting kids in younger. So I was sort of the first in that first group of kids that came in Australia. And we had a lot of successful diving Olympians at that stage, but they were all like a little bit older, like late 20s, early 30s even. There was sort of trialing bringing kids in. And when you went in there, it was just constantly like evaluations and standards you had to meet. And it was sort of a good environment in that we were all very competitive, but then they would just drop people quite frequently, so you always were worried that you had your head on the chopping block and that you weren't meeting standards. So I think that then going into comps and that kind of thing, I was always just really aware, not so much of how I did in the comps, in not only thinking of that, but just always worrying about maintaining my place in the squad.
Yeah, there's
there was one story I remember you telling where so you've made the move. Did you start your diving in Sydney and then moved to Brisbane, or where did that start for you?
Yeah, I did. I started in Sydney and I started in a club here. So that was a bit more just recreational for fun. That's where I just started diving, fell in love with the sport. And then I moved to Queensland with my family. We're originally on the Gold Coast and I was just diving for a little bit in a club there. And then from there, I got, I was seen by the Chinese coaches in Brisbane, and then they invited me to train the program in Brisbane. So then after that, my family moved to Brisbane.
And how did you go in Brisbane? Because I know you then made the move to Sydney. What happened?
So I was, I can't remember how many years I was training there for, but basically I trained for a few years and I had a really good coach and I got really good. And that's when I started doing my first senior international comps, like my first Commonwealth Games in Melbourne. And I made my first Olympic team as well, competed in Beijing in 2008. And then I think just after that, I then had to move. They kept me with that coach that sort of brought me up for a little bit longer than they should have, because we worked really well together. And then after that, my first Olympics, they wanted me to move up to the head coach. So I did that for, I barely lasted a year. I just didn't gel well with him at all. And yeah, we butted heads a lot and I just ended up really unhappy, and he just sort of knew how to push my buttons and that kind of thing. And it just wasn't really a good fit. So I think from there, and I wasn't really in a good place mentally either. So I just decided that I couldn't do it anymore. I was either going to quit or that I had to do something different and get out of there. So that's why I decided to move to Sydney.
Incredible. And what a brave decision to do that as well when you're in that position.
Yeah, I think so. It was hard because at the time they weren't that supportive of people moving away, because that was sort of the main program there. And it's since decentralized, so you can train in different state institutes now. But at the time they really didn't support people who weren't diving in Brisbane. So that was a little bit scary as well, but it was definitely for the best for me. It was the best thing that I did, and I've been diving with the same coach ever since.
Clearly the best thing. I love this story that you've told in another interview where you would sit with your coach at a young age and watch international divers do their dives. And I love that story because as a dancer back in my day, I would also watch videos. You know, we'd film our crew, we'd go over and really, you know, get down to the nitty-gritty of what we did right and wrong, but also, you know, watching others and how they, you know, do their thing. How important was that for you in terms of whether it's your technique or your execution and stuff, or even just the fact that sitting down with your coach doing that for you, how important was that?
It was super important for me. I think that was actually a really, you know, a thing that helped me a lot that maybe my coach didn't even realize. Because I've always been a very visual learner. So I think just things that I was struggling with at the time, technically, to watch other people do it. And diving's, it's sort of, in one way, there's a certain technique to do it. But on the other hand, you also sort of have to find your own way to execute that technique. So sometimes hearing it a different way from a coach or seeing it a different way just helps you, I guess cement that pattern in your head and with your body, and it kind of helps you with it. So I always loved watching it. And then I think another reason why it was good was just seeing, especially the Chinese divers. I remember them, looking at them, and they're tiny and they were probably around my age. And I think just seeing that it was possible for them to compete at that level made me in my head think, okay, it's possible for me to get good. It's possible for me to compete at a young age as well. And I think that was a really big inspiration for me to want to get good fast when I was younger.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Well, I want to talk about your training. Tell us about it, because I mean, if when you talk to someone like a runner, I mean, that's pretty straightforward with their training and how they prep. What is I mean, are you constantly diving off the platform? What does your training look like?
Our training is split up each day. So we train twice a day most days, and the mornings are all dry. We don't get in the pool at all. We either do dry land sessions, which is very similar to gymnastics training, which is focused just purely on technique, and especially for our takeoff. So it's a lot of somersaulting, whether that's on trampolines or on the floor, like off boxes onto crash mats, or we have springboards into a pit. So it's basically just breaking the technique down as much as you can and preparing for dives in the pool. And we do that twice a week in the morning, and the other mornings we do gym. So that's just literally with a strength coach in the gym, and that's just focusing more on creating strength, power, core, good core. Those are probably the main sort of areas for us that are really important. And then in the afternoons, that's when we do all our diving. And that's kind of a mix of some days you'll do more technique or some days it will be harder. Just sort of depends how far out from comp you are, what you're doing, or if you, how injured you are in my case normally.
Yeah. Well, let's get to technique, because, I mean, you've been doing this for so long now. Are you always striving for better? Like, do you have it under your belt? Like, how are you training with technique and skill at the moment?
I think, yeah, it's really interesting. I guess you're always striving in terms of perfecting your dives and putting together a list of dives in competition to get a high score. So basically, if I do five dives in a competition, usually, you know, you do a few that are good and a couple aren't good. So you're always striving to put together that perfect list of five good dives. But in terms of technique, I think that it's actually easier in diving when you're younger. So for me, probably around that time when I went to my first Commonwealth Games and my first Olympics was when it just felt really easy, because you're really light, you spin really fast, and then it does get harder after you hit puberty. And then another challenge then, I think the hardest thing that it has been to work around in my career, is that you get injured. So the biggest challenge that I face with technique is that I know what I'm trying to do, I know what I'm trying to execute, but usually I'm limited by injury or mobility or something like that. So I have to find a way to adapt and still perform these movements that I know I don't have the mobility, or I can't do it at the time based on injury. And that's always, for me, it's not enjoyable, but it's something that I think I've learned over time that I'm quite good at in adapting. It's not always good for other parts of my body. Other things get injured, but I think you just learn how to perform with injuries, and that's a big part of sport.
Yeah, for sure. With your back, what does diving look like? Because your back's a big part of, you know, your body and what you're doing. So are you diving at the moment?
Yeah, I am. So my back injury from SAS basically prevented me from hitting like end range flexion, which is, you know, curling in a ball for tuck shapes, or piking, which is basically all of diving. And I also couldn't extend back, which is the same. Every time you spin backwards, you need to extend back when you hit the water. So it prevented me from doing a lot of movements, and I basically just had to stick to basic stuff for a long time and then just slowly build it up. And even now, everything hurts when I do it, but I think I've just found a good kind of balance at the moment of how much I can push it and how much I can't. Especially my dry land sessions in the mornings, we train at 6 a.m. It's not that early, but it's early for my body to get moving. So I have to cut, especially my dry land sessions, back a lot from what my normal training load is. And then I sort of save my back more for the afternoon. And then when it's a bit warmer later in the day, I can push it a little bit more.
Yeah. And so where does recovery fit into it?
Recovery is basically... for me, I put a lot of emphasis on my physio exercises and exercises I know will help. So actually a big part of that is not so much after training, but before training. So I'll spend, before I get in the pool in the afternoon, I literally spend an hour just warming up and putting in all those exercises and those activation things I know are going to make it better for me when I dive. And then after, if I feel like I need it, I'll put more of those exercises in again, or I'll like stretch. I usually do pretty long stretches. I'll stretch after training for half an hour or so, and it just, yeah, helps. I mean, I don't know if it helps much, but maybe it's just in my brain.
Mentally.
Mentally. But the next day, you notice it the next day. You notice it more if you don't do it than if you do it.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of thing.
Yeah.
How do you manage, I guess, peaking for something like the Olympics? Because again, when you bring it back to something like you're running, the training, you know, you're doing your peak load right in the middle, and then at the end you taper and whatnot. What does that look like for diving?
So for me, it's actually interesting. The last sort of probably the last 4 years or so, I've noticed if I'm not that injured and I'm peaking for comp, the more training I do and the more I sort of get into that groove where you're just kind of increasing and building to your peak, I feel like I physically respond quite well to that. So when I'm in my peak, I'm usually the least injured because I'm strong and everything's sort of working well, and I can push my body, and that is usually the case leading into comp. But then on the flip side, the more you push yourself doing these dives, I feel like I fatigue mentally first. And I think it's because you're always so focused and it's very technical, and then you kind of come in every day. And I think it's pushing yourself when you are fatigued. It's actually, for me, more of a mental thing than like pushing through that, and it becomes, yeah, you've got to be really strong in your mind to just back that up day in, day out. And then I think, yeah, that's interesting that, yeah, normally I have to find that balance end of peaking where I do enough that I'm physically prepared, but that I'm not starting to see like a decline in my mental sort of focus as I go into comp.
Yeah. And how do you train that mental aspect of things?
I think one thing I found was just trying to change it up a little bit. So finding ways to still get in the same amount of dives, and diving is quite repetitive. So it's repetitive because you train to be able to nail your dive, whether you have a perfect takeoff or not. So chances are in comp, if you're nervous, your takeoff is not always ideal. So you've got to make quick decisions in the air and you've got to be able to adjust in the water. So it's just a sport by nature where you'll just do reps. And so
you're
reps and
adjusting
reps.
In the air, did you say?
Yeah. Because you can't just rely on a takeoff. It's never perfect in the air when you take off. Sometimes it is. And what usually, even in comp, even if it's good, you have extra adrenaline, and sometimes you even spin faster or jump higher than what you did in training under fatigue. So you need to be able to make decisions in the air and make adjustments. I think just then in terms of training, like mentally, especially leading into Tokyo, we just trialed once a week. We would do like between us these little like mock competitions where we wouldn't necessarily score ourselves, but we'd practice it like a diving round. So it wasn't many people on platform, but you know, some of the other springboard divers, they would do their dive and we'd all do a round, and I'd go on platform and just making it a bit fun like that, or doing other little drills if I know I need to work on something technically, just trying to find different ways to approach it and things like that. And I feel like that kind of helped me a lot mentally and saved that sort of mental exhaustion a little bit just by mixing it up a bit.
Yeah, brilliant. So how do you hone your focus on competition day when you're on the platform, either by yourself or when you're, you know, with diving with a partner? Can you feel their nerves? Like, how do you really rein that in?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's hard, and that's again coming back to that mental aspect of diving. On comp day, it's very, very psychological, more so than physical. So you do all the physical work leading in, but on the day, for me anyway, it comes down 100% to mindset. So that's something I work with a psychologist on, in terms of just approaching everything positively, getting a nice sort of comp routine, practicing those like sort of keywords and positive reinforcements on a daily basis. So you're not just trying something new on comp day, you know exactly what works and what doesn't work. And then I think just in the moment, knowing what works for you as well. So I'm just always sort of quite focused, but probably I go the other way a bit too far. Like it's very sort of intense. So for me, it's more about just relaxing, calming down, having a few keywords. And just, I literally imagine when I'm on the end that I'm in training, like how I feel when I'm on the end of the board in training. And rather than trying to ramp it up, I really try and play it down, because in training I perform well, but over the years I've had a bit more of a tendency to choke under pressure in competition. So for me, in training, I imagine I'm in comp sometimes to ramp me up, and then in comp, I try and calm myself down.
Yeah.
So it's sort of opposite like that.
And how do you go with a partner? Does anything change there? And like in terms of, you know, the dynamic between how your partner might deal with their nerves compared to you, does it clash? Do you work well together? I mean, how does that go?
It can be difficult because you can have lots of different personalities. I've dived with a lot of different partners and they've all had different personalities. So it takes a couple of comps to, I guess, adjust to them and know what works for them and what doesn't. Because I think the hard thing is something might work for you and something might work for them, and it could be totally opposite, and you need to find a way to work together where the way you do it doesn't annoy the other person or put them off. So I prefer to be really calm in comp. I'm happy to have a chat with someone, have a laugh, and Hopefully, you know, most partners are like that, but some of them, they really like that intense focus. And I sort of know, okay, they've just do them and I won't interfere with whatever they're doing beforehand. Maybe just before we go, some make a comment to kind of calm them a bit and then just know, okay, we're in it together kind of thing. But then once you're on the end, you just basically count 1, 2, 3, go, and then you just go and hope for the best, basically.
This gets me. You count 1, 2, 3, go.
Yeah.
How, like, this might sound like the dumbest question ever, but like, is there a rhythm to that? Do you have a certain song in your head and that's kind of the beat you'll count into, or is it just like whatever you're feeling on the day and hope that they get go? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, well, it's very, in diving, I think the more simple, the better. So 1, 2, 3, go is just really simple, but you're not up there diving together for the first time. If ideally you go into comp and you've done a long block of training where you almost, you kind of know the rhythm, you know how long the person is going to take, you know, to turn around on the end, to stand there, if they're like really nervous, whether they're going to take a long time before they say 1, 2, 3, go, or whether they want to dive really quick and get off fast. And you sort of know all those things about your partner before you're in it, so that when you hear the 1, 2, 3, go, it's like a second nature thing, rather than, yeah, it doesn't have to be hugely technical, because everything else about diving is technical. And you've got to really, and that's where having a good rapport with your partner really helps, because you can anticipate that. And even things like, it is simple saying 1, 2, 3, go, but as the counter, you kind of have to wait that extra second for the message to get to the receiver. So if you need to be able to know whether or not they're likely to go faster than expected or slower than expected, and also make those adjustments with timing. But again, you should be prepared for that before you get to comp, hopefully.
Yeah, you must be so in sync. Do you find that with your partner outside a dive, like, you know, off the platform, out of the pool, you'll kind of like walk in sync together, or like pick something up at the same time? You're just so in sync.
I think it depends. Like, I've had partners more so early on in my career. I had like more long-term synchro partners that I dive with a lot. So you just get used to, yeah, you kind of know sort of everything about them, their little mannerisms and how they work. And that is sort of funny when things like that happen. But I think in the latter part of my career, I've had a different partner almost every year. And that's been a big challenge to kind of adjust to. And I have had a lot of synchro experience. So I think it does help in being able to adapt quickly to a new partner. But at the same time, constantly changing that, you feel like you're never really in a good rhythm with it. You're always sort of keeping all your senses open, you know, knowing whether they're going to move early, and you're trying to anticipate that. And it can be difficult when you're doing it with multiple different partners year after year.
Yeah, added stress. Going into competition, do you ever look at the competitors who you're diving against, what sort of dives that they're doing, or do you just completely block everything else out and focus on what you're doing?
So basically everyone does pretty similar dives, or you already know after competing against everyone for so long what their dive list is going to be. In diving, there's not like a huge amount of different dives you can do. There's basically on platform like 6 directions that you can do. So either in that direction, you're either going to be doing like a 2.5 or a 3.5. So there's not really people that go and make up their own dives or anything like that. It's not like other sports. So it's pretty set. So it's not so much that you watch what dives they're doing, but you always watch how they're performing them and how they're looking. And before every comp, we'll have about 3 training days beforehand. And at the big ones, they'll put us into training groups so that everyone gets a good amount of time on the boards. And so some competitors you get to see, and then some, if you're not in their training group, you don't get to see them until comp day. But definitely subconsciously, I always watch to see how people are looking. Not just that, I also pick up on those days how they're, I think actually more so, not just how they're looking with their diving, but their sort of mindset and how they're looking when they're standing on the platform, whether they're looking confident or not. But at the end of the day, you have to do your own dives anyway. So it doesn't matter what your competitors do. So on comp day, that's something I've had to work really hard on, is to just block everybody else out and just do me. But I think it's more just me taking note on those training days. If someone's not looking that confident. I kind of just use that to help me to be like, okay, you know, you've done the prep, you've done well, and I just use it to fuel me rather than focusing too much on what they're doing.
Yeah. Tell us about the impact of diving, because obviously you've got this back injury in my, and before you were saying it's the flexion and extension of the body. Meanwhile, prior to you saying that, I was just thinking of, you know, like the impact of hitting the water. I didn't even think about all the twists and turns in the air. So what are the impacts of diving?
Yeah, actually, that's a good question, because the somersaulting and all that is more painful on my back, but actually I haven't been noticing recently. Every time I hit the water as well, it hurts as well, like everything sort of hurts. But it's quite a lot of impact, especially over time. I noticed when I was younger, I didn't really think about it that much, and then as I got older and I got more injured, the impact of hitting the water definitely affected me a lot more, especially I've had neck injuries in the past. And I think basically when you go through the water, you have to basically, we're always looking for what we call a rip entry in diving. So it's when you make no splash, basically. And in order to do that, you have your hands together as you touch the water. And then right as you hit the water, you actually will split your hands apart and you create a hole for your body to go through. And that's how you create that rip entry. So basically, in terms of impact and force, initially when you hit the water, your wrists take that force. And then as you go in the water, basically then your elbows, your shoulders, your neck, everything, and your whole upper body sort of takes that impact. So it definitely is something that I've at this age feel a lot in my whole upper body. But yeah, I guess you are used to it though, because I've been doing it for a long time, but I've just noticed over time that it hurts a lot more the older that you get.
We probably won't use that snippet to sell diving.
Probably not. Yeah, but we hit the water from 10 meters at about 60 k's an hour. So it's quite fast. Yeah. The easier dives where you don't do as many salts and you fall longer, they actually hurt your body more when you hit the water than the ones where you do more somersaulting. So when you do more salts, I think the force is like less vertically, if that makes sense. It doesn't hurt quite as much. But the basic ones where you're just dropping 10 meters, that's just, yeah, a massive impact when you hit the water.
Wow, that's incredible. What has been the most challenging part of your career?
I think probably, I don't know. There's been a few. I think injury definitely just goes without saying, but I think then just the other challenges, more of the psychological challenges, there's been a few. Definitely, I think the hard thing for me, not just in my career but just in my life, was losing my sister in 2014. That was a massive, thing for my family. We just, I think, you know, you're never the same after that, so everything's more challenging. And then I think just for me from a young age, just not having a lot of self-belief and self-confidence. I think it just always started from worrying about, you know, my place in the squad as a young athlete, to then, you know, meeting the expectations of, you know, Australia, Diving Australia, all these, you know, people I had to sort of answer to and perform for. I think that just sort of beat me down a bit, and I really felt that mentally. So I think for me it's been a really long time and a long process of building up that self-esteem. And that was for me, not just as an athlete, but as a person. When I did that as a person, that then it translated over to me as an athlete as well.
When was that?
When did you feel like you
felt better in yourself and your mindset?
Oh, it's taken a long time. So it was a gradual thing. I think basically probably from maybe I guess the last Olympic cycle or so last 4 or 5 years is when I sort of finally found a bit more of a rhythm. Didn't mean that every comp was good, but just generally how I approached it and how I felt about myself was a lot better. But definitely a lot of those early years, it was not good. Even before I went into comp, I knew I wasn't confident, and I didn't really value myself either.
Yeah. With COVID, how do you dive when you don't have a pool?
Yeah, it was
how'd the training go?
it's quite difficult to dive without a pool and a tower at home. But I think for us, because a bulk, like 50% of our training is dry land anyway, I was able to keep doing some of that at home. I was lucky that I have a home gym that I own with my brother and sister, and I just went out and bought a trampoline once I knew we were going into lockdown. But I had other stuff already here, like crash mats and things like that, boxes to flip off. So I just kept doing that stuff, and I didn't actually lose too much of that somersaulting fitness and awareness over COVID. It was more just then once we did get back in the pool, just getting the feel of those dives back again.
What is your favorite memory over your career? It's a long career.
You've
walked away with lots of medals, but what would have to be your favorite memory?
I don't know if I have a favorite memory. We just always, some of my teammates, my coach and I will quite often just reminisce about competitions and all the funny things that happened. We have a pretty relaxed training environment and a good team sort of vibe. And I think it's funny, like, because when you're at comp, you're just so focused on competition and you never really think about all these other things. But then later when you look back, you don't remember any of the comp. All you remember is these funny things that happened and, you know, just ridiculous things. And so, I don't know. I don't have a favorite, but just probably when I think about my career and I think about the things I enjoyed, it's always these stupid, funny little things that went on, you know, on these trips. And it's hard. It's hard with COVID. Like, that's the thing that I think was the hardest about COVID, was not being able to travel and do all that stuff, because that's the best thing about competing, is being able to travel and go away with your team and just, yeah, create memories and have funny times, basically.
Well, you've intrigued me now. It sounds about a ridiculous moment.
Oh, all right. Probably like one that I could think of was just we were on a plane. We're going somewhere that wasn't – we were on this really small plane. Like, it was probably only 3 seats wide. So it was like 2 on one side of the aisle and then 1 seat on the other side. So a really small plane. And we had turbulence, and it was quite bumpy because the plane was so small. And my coach was sleeping, and he's been, you know, he's been around as an athlete and as a coach, and he has, you know, traveled so much. And he was sleeping, and he woke up and he randomly just started freaking out, like, on the plane. And we were all freaked out, like, something was, we were like, oh my gosh, well, he's flown for like ages, so he knows, you know, something must be up. And then
something we don't.
Yeah. And then the guy next to him, one of my teammates, like, woke up from, he was asleep as well, woke up from my coach freaking out. And he was just like not that worried, but then he saw him freaking out, so he just then started freaking out. Like, 2 of them on the other side of the plane just like having this, you know, freak out panic attack. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, damn it. I'm like, and it was just funny, he had to sort of be at the time. It was just these 2 random people freaking out on this plane, a bit of turbulence. And just stuff like that. It's always just silly things that were just ridiculous at the time, that you had to laugh.
Yeah, that actually, that's a really, I mean, funny, interesting segue into your SAS experience, because we've just come off the second episode where you're all in, they call it the beehive, you're all in water and you have to get really close together. And it's that when one person panics, it's hard not to not panic, because, you know, it's so contagious. Tell us about this whole experience. I mean, it's looking phenomenal so far. How have you walked away feeling about it all?
Yeah, it was a pretty incredible experience. It was quite intense for me, the first few days, especially with the water tasks. I did not go very well. I'm not a very confident swimmer. Definitely more confident with the acrobatic type things and stuff like that, but swimming is not my forte. But I think actually the one that was on last night, day 2, that was probably for me the worst day in terms of how I felt and being quite affected by that task. And I didn't think it looked as bad on TV as what it was, because the thing is, when you all swim close together, you're just trying to basically tread water and stay afloat. You're so close together that by everybody doing that, you're drowning each other as you do it. So it's, you know, it, maybe you're up and then the person next to you is underwater, and vice versa. And then there were a few other rounds we had to keep going in that they didn't show, where we had those masks on that you had to fill up with water from your nose and covering your eyes. We had to then do it with these sticks above our head, so you could only breathe through your mouth, with a stick above your head or getting close. And it was really hard. And then the worst part too for me was because everyone was treading water in the middle, if when you tried to swim out of the tank, like it was, I couldn't get out after when I was swimming to try and get to the side because we had to keep getting out and back in. And just, I think for me, I panic when I feel like I'm swimming, but I'm not going anywhere and you're just so tired and you're not moving. And you're like, I don't think I can get to the edge of the tank. So that was pretty bad for me. So I think for me after that day, knowing that I got through that, I was just like, okay, I think I could do anything now, yeah. Basically. Yeah. And I really drew a lot from, I learned a lot over the course. I drew a lot on what I've learned as an athlete and made me realize certain things I do as an athlete that I didn't realize that were, you know, just good things built up over time and experience. And so I drew on that a lot. And then I learned a lot that will help me, I think, as an athlete in other areas of my life as well, in terms of along the lines of the don't panic thing, but basically just, you know, in terms of anticipating things, just trying to just, you just sort of have to go with the flow. You can't really prepare for anything. You've just got to attack it head on and do your best and just really keep you cool in the moment and not freak out. And I think that is a huge thing that I've done over, you know, most of my career in diving under pressure. So I think that will actually help me a lot outside of SAS as well.
Yeah. And never tread water near a group of people.
Exactly. Yeah. Never do the beehive again and you'll be fine.
Was Barry holding you up at one stage? I thought he was helping you out.
Oh, he was helping me, but also I was drowning him, not intentionally. Oh. But I think he was holding me up, but also he was not having a good time because I'm pretty sure I was drowning. Yeah, it was pretty rough.
So it creates like a vortex almost.
It
in
does.
The middle, like pulling you in or?
No, it doesn't pull you in. It's just if you try and get out of it, it's really hard to get out. Basically, when you're all in together, you just trying to stay afloat. It just drowns people because it's difficult to stay afloat without going into sort of, especially when we didn't have arms, we had the rods, you automatically want to go into like this egg beater type kick, but you can't because everyone's so close to you. If you kick out to the side, then you're just kicking people and you can't stay afloat. So you have to then try and do these little like kicks and you always have to work together and you basically just have to stay calm and not freak out and just, yeah, it was a bit crazy.
Wow. That was incredible. Let's talk about the lead up to it. Did you, firstly, how did you even get into it? How did it work for you?
So Yana Pittman, who was on the last season, messaged me to ask me if I'd be interested in doing it.
Unbelievably.
She did. She's unbelievable. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. So I've known Yana for a little bit because we're sort of related by marriage. So we're sort of cousin. So I've known her for a while. She's just incredible. She's super hardworking. And as soon as she went on SAS, I knew she was going to be amazing. And it was so inspiring to watch as well. I loved it. And so basically she asked me if I wanted to do it. And at first I thought, no way, because I, you know, if I wanted to keep diving, I was really worried about getting injured. And then I just sat on it for a few days and thought, oh, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. If I don't take it, I might not get to do it again. So I ended up agreeing to it. The SAS sort of producers, I told them I was a bit worried about injury. They said, oh, if you're going to keep diving, probably don't do it. but I, you know, just decided that, it, you know, just to do it.
Oh, and great. It was good. Help me in.
Yeah. It was kind of good to have something to focus on after Olympics as well, because when you are peaked for that kind of event, there is always a little bit of a slump after. So it is hard to sort of refocus and get yourself going again. So I thought this is actually a really good opportunity to just have something different to work towards and like a new goal. And I basically I was in hotel quarantine at the time, straight after Tokyo. So after I came out of that, I had about 4 weeks to prepare for SAS. It was really different. I guess I just sort of, because I was used to a normal training routine, I just kept in the same number of sessions I normally do, but in for diving, but just switched it out for all SAS stuff. So the biggest things for me that I knew I had to work on were, like, one, I had to bulk up a bit. Two, just lifting things. I've never been great at, we don't do a lot of it in diving. We don't lift heavy things and I wasn't really confident with that. We don't do any cardiovascular fitness either. I've always enjoyed running and fitness, so I didn't mind. And that's, I think, like the quickest thing I really noticed that once I trained that it got much better quite quickly. So that was good. And I just had to improve to my just strength endurance. So being able to do sort of things that were strength related, but for a long period of time, because everything in dieting is power. So it's short, sharp and fast. So that was also really different. So it was, my training was quite different. And then just things like trying to box at home, lift my brother over my shoulders and random things like that. Getting used to walking with the Bergen on your back. That's 20 kilos that you've got to carry around with you everywhere. So it was really different, but it was kind of fun. It was cool to train hard, but for something completely different to what I'm used to doing.
And were you glad that you did that training prior to going into it? Did you feel like you really benefited from that?
Yeah, definitely. I noticed a big difference even from like the first week to the fourth week, and I had to push myself quite hard. So I actually struggled quite a bit with that training just because I felt like I was sort of always working in a really fatigued state, and I was, you know, doing runs and I was doing all these other sessions and doing all this stuff, and I just always felt fatigued. So I'd get to the end of the week and just physically was ruined. But I think that it was really good to do that and get used to that. And then I sort of, then it's kind of like comp, everyone told me, you know, make sure you just sort of taper a bit before you go in so that you're feeling really fresh. So then once I tapered that off leading in, I felt much better, but I could see all the work that I'd done, and I think it really paid off for me.
What was the most challenging thing about the experience? Besides not trying not to drown.
Yeah, that was pretty challenging. Anything swimming was challenging because we were in lockdown as well, so I couldn't go to a pool or anything during that time. So that was the one thing I didn't get to do. But aside from the swimming, I think the most challenging thing for me probably was just anticipating the tasks. So quite often in the car, you never knew how long it was going to be. It could be a 10-minute trip to the task, or it could be 2 hours, 2.5 hours to the task. And the windows on the side of the car are all blacked out. You can only see through the front windscreen. And so you're kind of always trying to see where you are and where you're going, but you never get told anything. So you prepare to kind of, and as soon as you get there, they yell at you, quick, get up, go, get your Bergens. So you've got to be ready to go. So you're always kind of in that state of, okay, I'm ready. But when it gets dragged out for 2 hours, it's kind of difficult. And I think just that, not getting nervous, just sort of sitting there and just relaxing a little bit, because I think I'm used to in diving always being prepared for competition. You never go in and you never have to do anything different from what you've done every day for your whole life, sort of thing. You just have to master that. But in this, it was a different thing every day, and you couldn't predict, because it looked like you were going to the beach and then you'd end up, you know, at a quarry, or you didn't know what you were doing where. Or we ended up at this place that had horses out the front, and then we went down behind it down this road for another half an hour on this tiny little road and did something completely different. So you can never pick what it's going to be until you actually do it.
How did you manage that mentally?
I think that's probably one of the times when I drew on some of the things that I've learned as an athlete, because quite often like in competition, comp can go for 3 hours at a time, and you've got to learn how to sort of switch on, switch off, and you can't be on that whole time or you'll burn out after the second round. You've got to know, okay, I've got to last, you know, 3.5 hours and be able to focus when I need it. So I think that was something I really drew on a lot. And even just sometimes when you compete at nighttime and you have the morning off, you sort of wake up in the morning and you're already like, it's comp day, but you know you're not competing for hours later. So you've got to be able to just go through the day, go through the motions, and not think about it early. Otherwise, again, you just sort of burn yourself out before you even get to the comp. So I think for me, I drew on a lot of that sort of thing. But then I also learned, I guess, how to deal with it on the course, which will hopefully help me then as an athlete when I'm diving.
Yeah. And did anything shock you or surprise you?
I think that because you just get used to sort of doing things that it's different every day, and you don't know what's coming. I don't think anything shocked me any more than the previous thing that we'd done. It was all just completely different. I think our course, there were some similarities, obviously, but there are also a lot of different things compared to previous seasons. So I think that you just sort of, as it went on, I think, you go in with a bit of a preconceived idea because you have seen other seasons. But when it was all started, it was different. You just kind of let that go, and you just have to go into the next day knowing, I don't know what it's going to be. And you just have to sort of deal with it when it comes.
Yeah, that's it. You said in last night's episode that controlling your emotions has always been hard for you. How so, and how has this experience helped you with that?
I think like controlling my emotions, more so just in the sense of when you're under pressure and having to perform, which is the similarity between SAS and being an athlete, is that in that moment, it doesn't matter how you're feeling, you have to perform. And in that moment, you could be nervous, you could be excited, you could be worried, you could be stressed. You need to learn how to sort of reel that in. And it's something that I'm not naturally good at, which is why I've had to work with a psych so many years to try and get on top of that. But it is something I think I've gotten better at. And I think that being put into a situation so far outside of my comfort zone, like SAS, and having to do it, you know, the whole time that you're there, basically you're always on your toes. You don't know what's going to come your way, and you don't know how you're going to feel. And, you know, your emotions are just like this the whole time. I think just, yeah, learning to deal with that was a huge thing. I think that's going to, I'm going to benefit from that a lot in all aspects of my life. But I guess it's just something that you have to have a strong mindset, I think, to do that. There's not really something I learned that really helped me. You just sort of every day just wake up and you just have to say, I'm going to give it everything. And you just have to be really mentally strong.
Yeah. How do you deal with, obviously we get a edited version of what happened. How much are the guys really in your face, and what's that like for you? Is it really confronting? Is it a wake-up call? Like, how do you deal with that?
It can be quite confronting, especially when you first get there. It's sort of just, you know, 0 to 100. They're full on straight away. There's no easing into it. So I think if you're not used to it, it's quite a lot. They didn't show it, but I got yelled at pretty bad on the first day. I didn't mind it. I think at the end of the day, they want the best thing for you. Sometimes what they're saying is negative, but a lot of the time they do pretty much all the tasks with you. So every time you're running, they're running. When you're doing stuff, they're doing stuff. And a lot of the time they're yelling at you, but it's positive as well. And you can really feel that they want you to push yourself and get the most out of the course. So they'll push you to be your best. And I think I just enjoy that as an older athlete now. It's when you're younger, you know, your coach really does that as well. He pushes you and tells you what to do, tells you, you just sort of get spoon-fed a little bit as a young athlete. And as you get older, especially with my coach, we've got a really good rapport. It's a bit more of a relaxed approach. And basically what I put in, he'll put in, and we'll work together. But you have to be really self-motivated. You have to turn up and push yourself every day. So on the other hand, it was kind of easier when you've got someone yelling at you in your face to do it. It's a lot easier than when you're telling yourself, oh, I've got to get up and do this. So I actually quite enjoyed that aspect of it and just being told, you know, get in and do it. Because if they weren't doing that, I would have second-guessed myself probably so many times. But in the moment when they're just telling you, right, you're just going to get in and do it and this is how it's going to be, you just, okay, and you go for it. And you probably end up doing things that you never thought that you'd do otherwise.
And I would think for someone like you, so in tune with yourself, but also having done synchro diving and having been in tune with others, like you could draw so much energy from that.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I think it always helps having others around you. And that's one thing that I really enjoyed about it too, because I've been in synchro teams, but predominantly mainly focused on my individual diving the last few years. So it's a very sort of individual sport and we don't really get to work too much in teams, but we got to do a lot of that on the course, and that was really cool, working with different people, working together as a team, and everybody sort of playing to their strengths. And, you know, one day someone will be the strongest and the other day someone else will. And it's really cool to see what everyone's good at and how you can all support each other and how much that team support really helps to keep everybody going and to push for everyone to push themselves harder.
Yeah. So tell us about that camaraderie with everyone, because we don't really get to see that side of things. We see the awful things that you guys have been put through, but we don't get to see the other stuff. Do you really get to closely bond together and support each other through everything?
Yeah, definitely. The whole thing is based on that. Basically, you're always a team, you're always looking out for each other. Even from the little things, you know, when you get up in the morning, you go to the parade square, everyone's got to have their drink bottles filled, you know, we all checked each other's kit, checked each other's drink bottles, things like that. And when you go in, you get your devices taken off you a few days before, so you don't know who's on the course, so you don't have a chance to Google anybody or anything. So you'll start this course and you won't know a lot of people, you won't know their backstories. You won't go in with any preconceived ideas. And I think that that's awesome because you just get to know everybody there and then on face value and build that really genuine rapport without any of the other stuff from the past. And I think that's really cool. Definitely made a lot of good friendships and gotten to know people in a really, I guess, like authentic kind of way.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what's it like when you see, you know, because you become friends and then you see your friends, you know, experience, you know, their worst fears? Because, you know, like that, the first episode, the plane going down and the water cup. I mean, that's like my worst nightmare. I was getting heart palpitations just watching it. How do you feel and how do you go when you see others have such strong reactions?
When you say reactions, do you mean in like a negative way or a positive way? Like
probably like a negative, real scary stuff. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I guess most of the time you don't get to actually see,
you don't see them.
So some tasks you do and some you don't. So some things when you're all in it together, you have to know what's going on around you. You have to support the team, but you're also trying to pull your weight. So a lot of the time you're just focusing on, you know, what you're doing and that kind of thing. And then other tasks that are more individual, so that it's fair, if you go one at a time, you don't get to see when people are doing things or them struggle. So a lot of these things I'll see other people do it for the first time, you know, when I watch the series, same as you. And I think that you can just talk about it after and explain it, but you don't actually get to see any of it. But yeah, there wasn't too many like super scary things that happened or anything like that. Probably most of them were involving me. I was like the one who was doing all the stupid scary stuff. But yeah, I think though at the end of the day you're support each other and, you know, you're always there for each other, and we all kind of did whatever we could to help each other out on the course, whether it was on tasks or at the accommodation, wherever we were.
Yeah, one of the promos that are circling around the most popular is potentially the one where you come out and face plant.
Yeah.
What happened? And do you remember any of that, going through that
when you look back? So the last thing I remember was like just as I was running out of that room. I remember seeing like where the door was and taking that first step out, and that's all I remembered before I woke up. So I don't remember like actually falling or anything like that. It was a bit weird. But it was, basically it was in the middle of a task, but I think to be honest, it was a lot of fatigue related for me. I was really, really fatigued. I was, you know, the smallest on the course and carrying that burden everywhere, trying to pull my weight on team tasks and just basically give 100%. I think just as an athlete, you're used to pushing yourself until you just
can't
constantly
anymore.
Pushing yourself. Yeah. So for me, I just, that morning felt really fatigued, really tired. Even just, you know, running a few steps with the Bergen up to the Pro Square, I was really feeling it. And I think, it was just something that just happened. It wasn't, couldn't really help it, but it was okay for me because I don't really remember
it. What was your reaction the first time you saw it?
Oh, it was okay. I think because I knew what happened. Yeah. I knew it would probably look a bit dramatic, but I just remember at the time, just I was mortified. Like when I woke up, mortified that I'd, you know, in front of the DS, how bad that was. And I was worried that they'd come with me from the course and I didn't get to finish the task. And then I had to have the, you probably saw that I had the oxygen, and I was mortified. I just wanted to go and line up with the others and
I'm fine.
I tried to get up as quick as I could, and it was a bit crazy. But I think you're just in that mindset where you're really in that mindset on the course of just, you have a job to do, you've got to do it at all costs sort of thing. So for me to do that was I was mortified that happened.
How did you manage your recovery? I mean, you just said that, you know, you were so fatigued. Was there, you know, any time where you guys concentrated on your bodies physically, mentally, or is it just go, go, go? Train, wake up, eat, more crazy experiences eat? Like, what was it like?
We did sometimes we would get told that, you know, there would be no movement until a certain time in the morning. So those days you knew, okay, we've got the rest of the night then to not, they're probably not going to wake us up and do all this crazy stuff. So those nights we then would do a little, you know, stretching routine together and stuff like that. And there were, everyone was pretty fit. So we were all struggling physically. So that was kind of nice to just do that all together. And you just kind of had to pick your times for that, because the other times you sort of had to be always sort of ready to get up and go. But it is hard. Like a bit of stretching, you know, maybe does the job if you're an athlete, you know, day to day. But when you're doing that kind of strenuous stuff day in, day out on SES, it didn't do a lot. There's not much you can do in terms of recovery. It's more just you've got to try and prepare as well as you can leading in, because it's very physical. It is at the end of the day.
Do you have a favorite experience out of the whole thing, looking back?
I think so. Like we got to do some cool stuff, some crazy, scary stuff, but some cool stuff as well. So I can't reveal too much. You have to watch the series, but definitely there's some pretty cool chopper stuff in there that I really enjoyed all those parts of the course.
Well, I bloody can't wait to watch it. Life outside of diving. Tell us, I know you have a couple of businesses. Tell us quickly about that.
Yeah, I do. So I own a gym called Hardcore Strength and Weightlifting Club with my brother and my sister. And it's predominantly focused around weightlifting, because my whole family, except for me, does weightlifting basically. And I do a little bit of coaching, more gymnastics type stuff, more for CrossFit and things like that. But it's really cool. It's great. We've got a good, really good club happening. We're the biggest club in New South Wales now, second biggest in Australia. We just operate mainly out of our garage gym and a little bit out of our friend's gym, so that's not bad for a small little home gym.
Incredible. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, so it's really grown, especially in the last couple of years, and we've really focused a lot on the last few years as well on getting more youth athletes into weightlifting, because it's not the biggest sport for kids and it's got some sort of negative, you know, people have negative sort of feelings towards kids weightlifting, but it's like diving, it's really technical. So we don't just throw them under, you know, a lot of weight on the bar or anything
barbell,
like that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very safe the way we do it. But that's been really fun. And I get to work with the youth athletes, and we have these youth scholarship programs that we run where we give kids, you know, access to free training and this education program as well. And that's been really successful for us. That's great. I also own my own activewear label called Havoc Athletic, which is pretty cool. That's a nice little creative outlet for me. I've always been a bit creative and not really the office type or anything like that. So that's just a fun little side hustle that I do as well. And I also coach here and there. I co-own a business called Australian Diving Academy with my friend who also dived for Australia in 2016 at the Olympics, Kevin Chavez. So that's really cool. We basically run coaching programs where we give club kids access to dry land facilities and give them kind of specialized coaching, because in New South Wales, like, we're the only state where divers in the clubs don't have access to dry land, which I mentioned is about 50% of the training that I do. All those somersaulting and dry land stuff, the club kids don't get to do that here. So we basically provide opportunities for them to do that.
That is so incredible. When do you sleep?
Yeah, it keeps me pretty busy. I don't have a lot of time. I was doing diving coaching for NSFIS as well, but I've recently just stopped that because I've just spread myself too thin.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. It's good to have a little bit more time at my sleep now to focus on these things and focus on a little bit more recovery and sleep as well.
Yeah, for sure. Melissa, this has been so sensational. Thank you so much for chatting with me. Just quickly, if people want to find out about your gym or follow you or check out your activewear, how can they find you?
Yeah, sure. So Instagram is probably the best place to go. You can follow me, Melissa Page Wu, on Instagram. My gym is just at Hardcore Strength. It's HRDKAW. The KAW actually the initials of our sister that passed away. So that's in honor of her, name of our gym. And you can also follow Havoc Athletic. It's HAVOK Athletic on Instagram as well.
Awesome. We'll put all of those in the show notes for sure. To finish off, what advice would you give to those wanting a long career just like your own in any sport?
I think my best advice would be that, you know, things don't happen overnight. It's a, you know, things are a long time coming. You've got to put a lot of hard work in and you've got to be very resilient, know how to bounce back. There's definitely going to be challenges along the way, lots of things to overcome, but and lots of probably ups and downs. But I always think of it as that my biggest mistakes are my biggest learning opportunities and chances to grow. So no one gets to the top without that bumpy road, but it's just about getting back up when you get knocked down and enjoy what you do and keep working hard.
Absolutely. Incredible. Melissa, thank you so much for your time. You're an absolute powerhouse and inspiration. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
What an absolute champion. Make sure you head over to Instagram and follow her on her journey to the Commonwealth Games 2022. Also, check out her activewear label, Havoc Athletic. I will have all the links in the show notes for you, so make sure you head over there. Thank you so much for tuning into this special edition of the Bodies Built Better podcast. Make sure you subscribe and leave a review. And of course, come say hi on Instagram. You can find me at JackieTan_RMT. I really love talking with my listeners and connecting with you all. So make sure you come say hi over on Instagram. Until next time, have an awesome day, week, month, and year, and here's to a world of bodies built better.